I think there needs to be a lot more education on alcoholism, like also because alcohol kills more people than fentanyl. And I'm so glad that fentanyl and the opiate, and listen, I have a friend whose son died recently from it. And, you know, I mean, it's ravaging.
Yeah, it's a pandemic.
Like, no, it's ravaging our country and our like young people and stuff. And we have a serious problem in America with it. But
welcome to the podcast, where we introduce you to incredible humans who share their journeys with the mission to inspire you to harness your own inner tenacity to drive your life and career forward. And now, your host, Adam Posner.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm thrilled to be here in Melrose Studios in New York City with an incredible guest, Leah McSwinney. You may know her from Real Housewives season 12, 13, her amazing clothing line, Married to the Mob, and some other really cool shit that she's working on. We're excited to be here. I'm excited to be here. Leah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. This is just another wonderful LinkedIn connection, which I was just talking about how much I love LinkedIn. Shout out LinkedIn.
Shout out LinkedIn.
Sponsor this podcast.
Oh, man. Well, we have to go through Microsoft on that one. Does
Microsoft own LinkedIn?
They do own LinkedIn.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
When did you decide to join LinkedIn?
I've been on LinkedIn since like 2014. I just like had, you know what? I've been distracted the last like few years, you know? And I think that like I've always been like a creative person and like, you know, doing Married to the Mob. And like, you know, I published an art book, Futura's daughter, Tabitha, who's an amazing writer and like illustrator. And I was doing writing and, you know, I was always so creative and definitely, I think, COVID and then like being on the show, you know, obviously as a whole giant of itself. And it's kind of, you're in that. And now that I'm not in that and, you know, I'm getting my creative brain back because it takes a lot of like mental space, right?
It's got to take a ton of mental
exactly.
energy.
Exactly. So now I have like my mental space back and I went on LinkedIn and I'm like, what the hell is going on LinkedIn? And I have made so many amazing connections on there.
Well, that's how we met.
And this is one of them.
And shout out to our boy, Vinny P.
Shout out, Vinny.
How did you meet Vinny? I mean, the fun fact about him is he cast the first season of Jersey, season one, and I think first season of New York, Housewives.
Oh, really?
Fun fact.
That's so funny. I didn't know that. Well, he casted me on Millionaire Matchmaker back in the day.
Yes. I saw that in my research.
Which I think is on Netflix right now or something.
You were a consultant. What was your role in that show?
What do you mean? No, I was the millionaireess looking for
love.
Oh,
yes, yes. And did you find love?
No, I did. But the guy was very nice. He had a rice ball. He had a rice ball brand or something. He was very cute, very sweet. Will was his name. Very nice guy. I was not in the right place to really like meet someone, I think. And then me and Kier's dad were like, we're going to try to get back together. That didn't work out either.
That's a wrench in the works.
I think I was like a year sober at that point. So like, I was like, let me try to make things work with Rob because, you know, now I'm sober and it didn't work. But
well, let me ask you, let's talk about that show for a moment. I mean, obviously reality shows are a huge part of our universe. Yeah. Was there any hesitation back then on that first show of going on reality TV? Like,
of course.
A Pandora's box. You know, they're going to open up your background. You know, they're going to open up your past.
Right.
And you're on public display for anybody. And,
totally.
And your family and your daughter and your ex are all going to be fair game. I mean, was there hesitation at that point?
You know what? Yeah, definitely. They came to me a few times to do it. But also that show, you know, it was like a one show. It was like one episode. So it's like not
season,
that
episodic.
Invasive, right? So it wasn't like it was fun to do that show. Yeah.
That's
and
cool.
I like Patty. I mean, people were kind of like dragging her back then, like because she told me to leave my penis at home and that I have too much masculine energy, which I thought was like hilarious. And I also thought she's probably right. But you know,
I'm attracted to that. I mean, you met my wife.
Your wife is like the hottest. So but that was a cool experience. And I like Patty. I think she's a great person.
So let's fast forward a couple of years. Current reality show that you're most recently on. We're not going to get into details here on that show, but what I would really love to understand, we're going to talk parenting here in a little bit. Your daughter Kira is 16. She obviously knows what the hell is going on. She's on the internet. She's seeing shit being thrown around about her mom. How as a parent do you have those difficult conversations?
Yeah.
And is it a full open book with her? How do you manage that?
So my daughter is a fucking savage, okay? My daughter is the funniest, smartest, coolest freaking person who will go on TikTok from her Finsta or her fake TikTok and just
her burner account
better and will just drag people saying nasty things about me.
Like she will fuck them up.
But she's not that like affected by it. Like I think a couple months ago she's like so and so said, "Oh my god, your mom's on OnlyFans." Now, you know, very open with her, talked to her about it before I did it. My daughter's pretty open-minded. My daughter's pretty like mature, and we just have open conversations about these things. And
I absolutely love that.
We have a really good relationship. And then in terms of like the lawsuit or whatever, which I'm not, you know, going to get into, but
yeah. So we're moving on also, and great. You mentioned a couple of wars happening. Great.
Great.
We're moving on from that segment that we had to get out of the way here. Yeah. So let's start the podcast over again.
Let's start it now.
No, just kidding. I don't even know what the word is. I was really proud to see, and when I learned that you converted to Judaism, let's talk a little bit about that journey.
Yeah.
What was the impetus behind it before? And did you grow up religious? Let's talk a little bit about family history.
So I'm Irish and Italian.
What?
So, yeah, exactly. You know, lethal combo. Like,
helps with
alcoholic
yeah.
and vengeful. Okay?
Yeah, just like, terrible.
Like, totally wacko.
And Manischewitz isn't that good, so it's a good move.
You know what? My fucking dad loves Manischewitz.
It's too
and
sweet.
He grew up, he's fully Irish. It's like, I don't know. I grew up with him drinking Manischewitz. Like, no wonder why I'm a Jew now. But I went to Catholic school up until eighth grade. Loved praying, like loved God, loved that whole concept. Never believed in the Jesus part about it, which is interesting.
The story?
No, I believe in Jesus, but I was just like, I'm not praying like he's not my savior. You know, like I'm praying to God. Like for some reason, that's what I thought when I was like 7 years old. Of course, I wasn't like, maybe I'll convert to Judaism. And then when I was around 15, I met my best friend, Jackie. Jackie, I love you. She grew up modern Orthodox, but we were ravers. So, you know, like it was crazy because we'd
be
like—
you go to Limelight to pray.
That
was my church. That's where I got baptized into the club world here in New York City. Shout out to Limelight, which is now a fucking pizza place flea market.
Oh,
way to gentrify that shit. Ugh,
I know, it's so sad. No. But
like, don't go in that bathroom. I know what I did in that bathroom back in the day.
Oh, my God, that bathroom.
So many things I learned for the first time in there and saw. I was like,
oh, I know. No, that club, that church.
What are they doing?
It's just everything.
Yeah, it's Limelight. We'll leave it at that.
Anything goes.
And that was before cell phones, which is the best era of life ever.
Thank God.
Imagine. That's why clubbing was so good back then, because there was no fucking phones. There was no paparazzi.
I know.
You just enjoyed the music and the time and you were in there.
It was wonderful. You know, I'm paying for it now with my brain probably.
You know what? It was worth it. So we digress. Back to religion.
It was worth it. Okay, back to religion. So met Jackie, learned a lot about Judaism through her, was very interested in the traditions and the holidays, and they made a lot of sense to me. And I was like, okay. And then fast forward, started Married to the Mob, had business partners who were Jewish, was in the garment district with my office in the Empire State Building. A lot of Chabad rabbis were in the office all the time, and I would be talking to them. And this is like now when I got sober, so a lot about higher power and God and like leaning into that. And I was going to church a lot and kind of just going in and praying or whatever, but then started to like seek out other places for spirituality. And I started going to the Bhakti Center in the Lower East Side, which is also known for, you know, as the Hare Krishnas. But the proper term is Bhakti. And I found the Bhagavad Gita and started reading that. And that's how I found the Bhakti Center and this monk, Rasanath, who I love, who's not a monk anymore. Shout out Rasanath. He's absolutely incredible.
He demonked?
He demonked. But
unmonked?
Unmonked. But now he's teaching. He actually has a company called Upbuild. And he gets hired by a lot of different companies. And he implements the Bhagavad Gita aspect
within the corporate world.
Because he was working at Bank of America. He went to Cornell. He was working at Bank of America while living as a monk in the monastery.
Did they have Wi-Fi there?
I don't know. But then,
of course,
it was crazy. But then, of course, he moved over to the monk world. And then he went back to, you know, how do I merge both of these things? But I've met gurus and swamis through him. And
it's an interesting world.
Fast forward. I asked a rabbi to be my spiritual coach or guide or something. He said no, he couldn't do it. That's okay. Started reading a lot of books.
Well, I want to pause there for a quick second. You were very close with the monks. Was there a path towards Buddhism, or what drew you more? So we're getting to that part of the story here, but did you feel a magnet towards Buddhism through that connection?
It wasn't Buddhism though. It was bhakti. Okay. Yeah. And I did feel a connection to it, and I still do, you know, and also like whatever, I've read a lot about Buddhism and I think it's great. My mother, when I told her I was converting, she's like, I'm surprised you're not becoming a Buddhist. And I'm like, well, there's so many Jews that become Buddhists. So it's kind of like,
it's a gateway religion.
It is. So it kind of like also makes sense that I'm becoming a Jew. But I wrote an article for a tablet about the Women's March and the anti-Semitism in the Women's March. A ballsy move. I had a lot of friends who were close with those people. You know, I was branded like someone who was trying to like, you know, take down like some kind of women's empowerment thing, or I don't know.
But that wasn't the angle you were going for.
What?
You weren't trying to take them down.
Oh, no, of course I was. Of course not. I was trying to bring to light the anti-Semitism. And, you know, the DNC pulled out of the Women's March, and they were, you know, they went on The View and they went on this and that. And it was really interesting. And I felt a very close tie to Judaism, you know, through doing this as well. Like things kept, you know, piling up. And then I will say, which I've never really said this publicly anywhere, but I was, and I've become close with Barry Weiss at that time too. And I was at a dinner. It was February of 2020, right before COVID and right before I quit drinking again. And I was like at a dinner with her and Alana Newhouse, who was the editor of Tablet. And I said, I'm converting. I'm doing this for real. And they both gave me their separate rabbis. And then I had to kind of pick which one. And that was really difficult because I loved both of them. But one was Orthodox and one was conservative. And I actually became closer with the Orthodox rabbi. But, oh, it was really funny because he called me. I was in Arizona and he called me and was like, so why do you want to become a Jew? And I was like,
I was about to say, let's get into the interview. I mean, I'm a recruiter by trade, so I'm very curious about the interview process that goes into conversion. Because I assume that when you go to through this process, they want to know the why.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you had it up here,
but
you couldn't get it out here.
So. Yeah, it's hard. Well, sometimes it's hard for me. I'm not like, I feel like I'm not the best with articulating myself sometimes.
Doing pretty good.
But thank you. But he called me. He said, now, I was like intimidated. I'm like, this is an Orthodox rabbi. I have tattoos and I've been naked on TV.
And
I have a brand called Married to the Mob. And, you know, oh my God, they'll never accept me.
Red flags out the wazoo.
And he knew that I was like stumped. He's like, well, let me start by saying I did some research on you. And I was like, oh, fuck.
Oh, no.
He's like, I saw that you said that you want Little Kim to play you if they ever made a movie about you. He said, well, I want Kendrick Lamar to play me.
It was Kismet, as we like to say. It was Kismet, as
Beshert. Okay, it was Beshert. So I was like, I love you. And I became very close with him and, you know, spent holidays with him and his family and went to his synagogue a few times. But I was like, if I convert this way, I'm not doing it authentically because I'm not going to keep Shabbat the way that they're going to. And I'm not going to eat kosher the way they're going to. Yes, I gave up pork. Yes, I gave up social media on Shabbat, but I'll convert.
I don't think I could do that.
No, you can.
Just put the phone down.
Do you give up anything?
No.
Whatever.
No.
Whatever. It's all about, you know,
it's in your heart.
It is. It's about intention, right? Right. And so when someone told me at a dinner once, like, you know, and I was like, what am I going to do? I can't not be on my phone because my daughter's out late and I need to talk to her. And, you know, and they're like,
It makes you in the moment, right? That's the point of Shabbat. It's family togetherness. Like, and we'll talk about the pandemic and October 7th, but it brought everyone together and it reinvigorated Shabbat. And it's not, yes, we do the prayer and the ladies gather and the little kids gather we light the candles and it's about the togetherness of the Jewish religion. And not that other religions don't have it, because so many other religions have it in their own beautiful way, but it's the ceremonies and it's the tradition that brings it together.
Absolutely.
So you put your phone down during Shabbos?
I put the social media down.
Oh, but not the phone.
But not the phone.
Because you need to know where she is.
I need to know where she is, right, exactly.
I think that's fair. It's like Jewish Lent, right? You give up the social media on a Friday, you'll be good.
But now I just kept it going till Monday. Because I liked it so much.
You're like, this feels kind of good.
Yeah, I'm like, I actually love not being on Instagram.
Does that reawaken, does that open up your creative third eye during that time when you're not going for that dopamine fix?
Oh my God, right? beyond. I think that if we weren't on social media, like what, imagine the things we would do, especially creative people, writers, or, you know, just artists of any kind. Imagine if you put all of those hours that you're—
the creativity. Yeah.
Into your creative
doom scrolling
thing, right? It's like, you know,
well,
yeah,
I mean, I it's a demise, and I don't want to go off the rails on social media, but I want to close this chapter of the conversation. What is that conversion process, as much as you're open to sharing?
So I was in a 6-month program with at Park Avenue Synagogue, shout out Rabbi Zuckerman, love him, the best. And then I had my mikvah, and I think it was March 21st or 24th. Second of 2022 that I converted.
Mikvah's quite the experience.
It was beautiful. It was amazing. Yeah. It was really amazing. It's funny, like me and my daughter were rewatching. Well, she never watched Sex and the City, and I was rewatching it for the 100th time with her. And the whole, you know, watching
the
Charlotte.
Full series or the movies?
The series. She hasn't watched the movies yet. Yeah, or maybe she did watch the movies and didn't like. No, she watched the movies.
I'm comfortable enough in my masculinity. I've watched all of them. I've watched all the movies.
Yeah,
they're
I've
enjoyable.
Watched the,
they're great movies.
I know. And also, people, you know, I actually liked And Just Like That. I'm
is
sorry.
It the last one? The final?
That was the TV show, the new TV
show.
The
new one. Like, I did not. We watched it. I did not. Did you like it, babe?
I did too. I'm like, you know what? I don't care if it's not as good enough or it's different than whatever. Okay, they're like dorky now and they're like super politically correct, or they're like kind of cringy. And
there's
like,
definitely a lot of cringe going
on. There's
a
lot
there.
Of cringe, but maybe that's who they became. Like they became those women. I don't know how, but whatever they did. I would have liked to have seen like one of them be kind of like a right winger or something.
Ooh, that would have made some pretty
wouldn't
nice
that
conflict.
Have been so interesting? Like if one of them
get
had like
Star
a total
on the horn.
Different.
Let's get that back.
Yeah, like what if some Charlotte. What if Charlotte was like?
She would be the logical one.
What if she was like a QAnoner?
we're gonna have a spinoff on that one with Little Kim playing Charlotte, and we're gonna bring that one back.
No, but like they're bringing up all these like cultural right, like the culture war right. kind of stuff. It's like go super into it, like lean into it. Like we have a non-binary person. Like let's have someone. Let's have the other side right, and be like, I can't call you they, or I don't know whatever. Like let's just make it like. Fuck it up.
Just fuck it up. Just go, fuck around and find out. So you converted to Judaism. We're going to fast forward here for a second. What is your favorite Jewish tradition or holiday? What do you love about being a Jew? What do you, Leah McSweeney, what do you love about being a Jew?
I love how many people hate me.
It's just like one more reason. Wait, she's a fucking Jew.
One more reason to not like me. The best part about being Jewish is having the community and the Jewish friends and family that I get to do Shabbat dinners and holidays with, and they've been, and it's been beautiful. It's been really beautiful.
Is your daughter converted or?
She's not converted.
Does she like the holidays though and the tradition and?
No. You know, I tried doing like Hanukkah. She's like, I want my presents on Christmas. Like, I don't want.
I just keep it.
I'm like,
just
but we can have them spread out. That'd be so much fun.
8 days. Our kids love
like
it.
Like 8 freaking days of presents. And she's like, no. I'm like, all right,
it's literally the most minor of all holidays, Hanukkah. It's like such a.
Right.
We Americanize it so the little Jewish kids in school.
Don't
like,
feel so
my
left out.
My son's getting
I know.
Presents and all that. But it's community and that's what it's all about. So I do want to dip into some current events right now. We were talking before we went live about October 7th. And I hate to say use the expression silver lining, but especially in our community where we're really strong, proud Jews, we weren't very vocal. We weren't vocal on social media, but what it did was it brought us together. Obviously everything is awful. And, you know, my heart goes out to the innocent kids and folks in Palestine and Gaza
who
are just, you know, war is absolutely awful. And there's travesty on both sides.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get into blame or anything, but how has this affected you over the last few months?
Well, when it was happening on October 7th, and I was watching the images.
It was a Saturday morning. I remember that. I was like, what the hell's going on here?
And I was trying to convey to non-Jews, some family members, some friends, like about how I was feeling and what this meant and what was going on, I felt like they weren't getting it. And I'm not saying that that's for everybody, but I was like, I honestly, for a while, I really couldn't talk to anyone that wasn't Jewish. I could only talk to my Jewish friends.
Because did you feel like they didn't get it? They didn't understand why this was, it wasn't just a normal terrorist attack.
Right.
And I don't know about you, I felt the world against us.
Yeah.
The anti-Semitism went through the roof. It's all there.
I couldn't believe how many Instagram stories I was seeing from people I knew that were like, okay, you're gonna see these horrible images, but and I was like, what? Like, I thought you were like down for like women. Like, I thought you were like down for like peace, or like, I thought you were down for, you know, like liberal causes or whatever. And it's just this, it's become this thing where it's like oppressed, oppressor. That's it. There's no other thing. And it's like, you know, it's very difficult. And of course I have, you know, I went to dinner with a friend who, you know, and I was very vocal about it, and I lost tons of Instagram followers. Not like same. I gave a shit, and it's okay, you know, but also like I was trying to also hear the other people and like hear like what they're thinking also. And I try to be open-minded and stuff, but there's some things where I'm like, you can't be, you have to say
there's
this unequivocally, like this
like,
is exactly
line.
Like this is
Hamas
like not,
is bad.
Hamas is bad.
There's
like,
no
Hamas
ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like
no
they're terrorists.
What?
They're awful.
Like no matter what, like no one, this was not like provoked. Like you can't say this was provoked, you know, like, so it definitely, and it's just not an easy conversation to have. Because also like, I don't know, like, I don't, you know, it, also like I'm not there, you know, we're not there. Right. But like, then there's the crazy thing is like, there's people that just have no skin in the game at all.
Right.
Like they're
throwing
not Jewish. They're not Arab. They don't
throwing
know
their opinions.
And they're
in.
Like, so, and yeah, I've lost a few friends and, you know, but not close friends, because those close friends, it's like, okay, you know, I don't ever want to lose close friends over. But maybe that's because I'm like not Jewish enough. I don't know. Maybe I'm not Jewish enough because my best friend, Jackie, oh my God, I'm like blowing her spot up. I should just call her by a different name. She's like a private person. But like she had a lot of friends where like she like lost a lot of friends. Like, you know, I felt horrible. Like, I'm like, oh my God, she's really like losing
it, it brought out a lot of people's true colors. And it's hard for us, I know for me, because I really wanted to weigh people's thoughts and opinions fairly,
right?
But there was
of
hard
course.
Lines for me, right? You can be, I'm empathetic towards the innocent, you know, on all sides,
obviously,
but I'm like, queers for Palestine, I'm like,
that
yeah, you go to fucking Palestine, see how fast you get thrown off a
no,
roof.
That the queers for Palestine stuff, it just doesn't it's almost like it's satire. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like a satire. It's like a weird, like, Curb Your Enthusiasm episode or something.
Skit.
Like, I don't know. You know, I don't know. I just want, I just keep the images I have in my head are Nama with her gray sweatpants and the blood, and then Noah and, you know, these young women who were just ripped from their homes that day. And it doesn't, and I of course have the images of like Palestinian children like being bombed, and you know, it's just there. It's just
it's a lose-lose situation.
But like, and I was emotional that day, I obviously, and you know, but it's like, I don't know, like how does anything,
how do you move forward?
How do they move forward? Like as a,
and when the hostages are still there, and God knows what these girls, it's awful. So
yeah.
Let's park it, and I have no easy transition.
There's no easy transition
out of this one. So we're going to switch gears here for a moment. And the core of the show, why I invited Leah on, is my show, The Podcast, is all about career journeys and unpacking them. And Leah was super excited to talk about her career journey, because you really haven't talked about that much, because it's always the other, you know, what's happening in pop culture.
Yeah.
But I'm super excited to talk about your entrepreneurial journey.
Thank you.
With Married to the Mob. So you've always been a creative. You've always been this fashionista side of you too. When did the bug to start a clothing brand come? Let's get to the origin story of Married to the Mob.
So, you know, growing up, I always said like I wanted to be an actress or I wanted to be a fashion designer. That was like when I was like 7. You know what I mean? And then of course, like I got into
little
drugs and stuff, and I like forgot about everything.
And
then I went to Limelight. And I was like, whatever. Like I need to, you know, like fucking get high.
That's freeing your spirit,
right? So, I was living in a halfway house on 17th Street. I started working at the guest store You know, I'd had, this is when I like kind of like I got sober, you know, I started getting high again. But I had this moment of like sobriety and like I had like these like things I wanted to accomplish, you know, even though I was always struggling like with the addiction aspect of sorts. But I had dreams and aspirations and I was really interested in fashion and I always had been. And, you know, I think growing up in New York definitely sparked that interest. And
it's in the air.
It's in the air. And it was like, you know, going to like private school on the Upper East Side and like the high fashion, then like growing up in Chelsea and seeing like more like downtown fashion and kind of like mixing high, low, like, you know, all of that.
Then you go to the and Lower like, East Side and it throws you for a loop.
Right. Exactly. And then like looking up to people like Little Kim, you know, and
club
and,
culture. Yeah. And like all that influence.
Right. That influence. So I, but to start the brand, you know, basically I was working retail and I also was just partying a lot and was getting fired because I couldn't like wake up and go to the open the store at like 9 a.m. And all these, you know, and at the time I was dating Rob. I was in that community of people, which was like Sir Russ from Sir. And, you know, I was hanging out with all the Supreme skaters and like, you know, they all had their own little brands. And I'm like, damn, these guys have their brands and they're like getting to travel the world. Just be like, people are sending them to places for free. And I had just gone to Europe for my first time and went to Paris and Copenhagen and Sweden. And I was just like, whoa, like
it's an eye opener. The whole world. Oh my God. You've seen it in pictures and TV, but like,
going to Paris was the coolest. Like my first trip to Paris was the most inspirational, fucking cool, like experience.
Was it the cliche Eiffel Tower, or was it the smells, the sight? Like, what was it that like that lit your spirit?
It was definitely the Eiffel Tower. I can't.
It's cliche as fuck, but like you see it, you're like, there it is.
You see it, and you're like, oh my God, I've been seeing this like in books and you know, in movies, and like here it is. It's beautiful. It's amazing. You know, but I think I was at a club. And I saw someone I knew from the city in the club. And I'm like, we're so interconnected. And we're such a, it's like the community, which is like, I guess the streetwear, downtown, whatever community at that time. I'm like, it's bigger than just New York, right? And it's like, its influence is worldwide.
But it also makes you feel that the world is small when you see people you know.
Yes.
And it's that global. It's so funny too. I remember the years before I met my beautiful wife, I was in Paris. And I remember the first time I saw it, it was literally, I was just walking around the corner and I wasn't expecting it. And I came around, and it's vivid in my brain. It's seared into my brain the first time I saw the
Eiffel
Tower. And I came around the corner in an alleyway. And then it was just in between these two, you know, nondescript buildings.
Right.
And I just stood there. I'm like, motherfucker, there it is.
I know. Yeah. It's really cool.
And we take it for granted here in New York. We live amongst all of these amazing sites. So
oh my God,
I don't know about you. Like when I walk around New York City and I see tourists, I smile at their amazement of this city that we like grew up in.
When they're, if they're not walking too slow in front
of
me,
fucking
I smile
them.
Also. But every time I'm flying home from somewhere and I see, or even driving home from somewhere and I see the skyline and maybe it's like right at like, you know, as like the sun setting or like in the sky can be pink or even
special.
If it's gray, like it doesn't matter. It's like our skyline and like, like
it's
ripped Twin Towers and like all of the people that like perished. But like our skyline is so powerful and beautiful. And I wanted to move out of New York. Now you're making me feel like I can't move out of New York City.
So what was it like starting this brand? What was like, was it a clear vision or was it an iteration? Like
it was like me hanging out at like Union and I had my friend Matt who had this brand Clarendon and then Rob had A-Life and you know, and then I was like sitting on my stoop on Spring Street with my friend Sharon and I was drinking a to-go margarita and I'm like, we need to have our own brand. And at the time I would joke around and be like, I'm a mob wife. I live a mob wife lifestyle, like shout out mob wife aesthetic. I keep saying shout out. It's so corny, but whatever. And I'm like, we'll just call it Married to the Mob. Not even thinking about it, you know, like that's just what the name will be.
Did the name come to you like this?
Just like that. Cause I was old. We already like, there was like a party that we were going to call Married to the Mob at Sway on Mondays. And then me and Roxy had a fight about it. Roxy Cottontail. This is like total early 2000s, like weird little downtown drama. And I'm like, no, you can't use that name for your Monday night party because I'm calling my brand that. And, you know, it was really funny. Me and her recently had a conversation about
Did
it.
You laugh about
we
it
were
now?
Laughing
of
so
course.
Hard about it. Like, oh my God, we were so dumb. But yeah, it just, and that's it. And then I was like, okay, that night I was like, okay, I'm doing four designs, Supreme Bitch, Fresh Out of Rehab, the Married to the Mob, which is a Married to the Mob logo, and then Boys Ain't Shit But Hoes and Tricks, you know? And I was like, that was it.
There we go. Let's get
and then
it going.
I literally, I think I got them. I went to Freedman's Alley, which I don't know.
Yeah.
Not Freedman's Alley. I'm sorry. That's like a bar. That's a bar. No. Yeah. There's a place called Freedman's, and it was where you bought wholesale American Apparel and like the Hasidics. Like,
yeah,
were running
like the white
it.
Label, and then you could do whatever you want with it.
Right. And it was like in the Lower East Side, and I bought, you know, a couple dozen t-shirts. I had a friend print them that was like working at A-Life who had a screen printer in his apartment. And I brought the t-shirts over to Union, and then the woman from Union, Marianne, brought them to James, and he said, okay, owner of Supreme. He said, okay, they start selling them at Union.
And that's the rest is history.
The rest is history.
Hey, everybody, I want to talk about a product and platform that I absolutely love and our latest sponsor, Interseller, the prospecting and outreach platform of choice for recruiters and sellers. Whether you're doubling down on business development or recruiting talent, Interseller does all the heavy lifting of finding contact data, automating the email and follow-up process, and syncs all that rich data into 20-plus CRM and ATS platforms. Reach out now and get going on a 2-week free trial and let them know you heard about it from Adam on the podcast today. Check out the link on the website. Appreciate it. What was one of those tough lessons learned the hard way with starting a business? Maybe something like, I mean, obviously you were learning on the fly.
I was learning on the fly. I had no idea.
That's not your background. You don't come from that, you know, the business side of it. But what was it like maybe a misconception? Like, do you think you were going to smack it out of the park right away? Or you're like, shit, this is harder than I thought.
Honestly, no, because I was so... I kind of did smack it out of the park right away. Like, I got lucky, you know? But it's more like what came after, right?
Well, after the initial high wore off.
The initial high, right? But I just didn't... Like, I'm like, you know, I don't know if it was like my... You know, some parts of my personality that like cause issues for me also are like the best parts that like help me.
Let's pause on that for a second. What are those parts that you think are, you know, a hindrance, but they really are your superpowers?
Right. So
I bet we have more in common than you think.
It's interesting because, you know, I got diagnosed with bipolar 2 disorder when I was 30, which I'm still, whatever, it's fine. I don't like to be like, I have bipolar 2, but I do, you know, anyway. I don't love labels, but I read an article about like entrepreneurs that and like bipolar 2 disorder, because there's this like obsessive, like I have obsessive thinking, and I have you know, the obsessive sauce. Thinking can really like help you and sometimes, and it can really hurt you sometimes. So the obsessive thinking and like the just dog with a bone kind of thing really helped. And I just didn't think twice about when there was a problem or when there was just, we'll fix it, we'll do this. I mean, I have literally, like, I got a call about like a printer that was like supposedly like not actually printing my stuff. And I got like a anonymous phone call that like my stuff was actually in a warehouse in Jersey. It wasn't in Queens, and I had to go pick it up, and I had to get a freaking U-Haul truck and get all this stuff. And then park it and then drive it upstate. I mean, it's like the things I've done with this brand to keep it going are insane, and only a crazy person would do it.
But those are the superpowers. That's
those
our drive.
Are the superpowers.
And that is, you know, from my experience, the entrepreneur's secret sauce.
Yeah.
Right? Because it takes a certain breed. And listen, I give everybody credit who goes out there and tries this shit. And the success rate is very low because it is this hard. And there's a barrier
so
to entry.
Hard.
There's a barrier to success. So talk to us. Where's the brand at now? What's on the horizon?
Right now, I'm in my design and production phase and rebuilding my website. And it's going to launch maybe in a month, you know. But it's really, this is like my daughter. This is like for my daughter. Like, I'm doing this for my daughter.
So this is part of the legacy that you're going to leave.
Because you know what she told me? This is funny. She's like, Mom, I was like researching your brand, and I found a Reddit page, and all these people were saying like your brand used to be so cool, and like they don't know what happened to it. And I'm like, honey, when you've had a brand for 20 years, it's really hard to keep it cool like every single day for 365 days a year for 20 years. Like, you're going to have ebbs and flows. And like some people, I still own 100% of my IP. Like, I could do whatever the fuck I want with my brand, you know? So, and when she said that, though, like, of course, it doesn't hurt my ego, because it's like I have learned to really kind of not have an ego. Not all. I mean, of course, I have one. But when it comes to certain things, when it comes to Married to the Mob, there's nothing that anyone could say that would ever hurt me. Because it's like,
it's
bitch,
baby.
You try it.
Yeah, go
no,
for
it's
it.
Like,
step
you
into
try
my
it,
arena.
Honey.
You try
like,
that.
You try
the
it.
The critic is never the one in the arena, Leah.
Never.
They're never the one. They're always on the fucking sidelines.
They're on Reddit,
and
right?
Like,
exactly. So
fucking trolls are just sitting there. Why don't you try launching a brand?
Yeah. So, you know, and keeping it going. And still, I mean, I'm still like making money from Married to the Mob. It's crazy, you know? So there's all different ways to do business, right? But now I am really, there's people, you could like people are making like millions and millions of dollars doing private label, like, and you'd never know it, right? But of course, that's not my business, and that's not what I'm interested in doing. It's not the only thing I'm interested in doing, and I love creating the, you know, and has telling stories with my brand, right? So like now I'm telling, now there's a new story to tell.
And what is that story?
You're gonna have to wait and see.
Oh, teaser element here. Well, I want to wrap up the conversation on entrepreneurship though. What from a business owner perspective, what's keeping you up at night?
I sleep pretty well.
Yeah.
I really do.
Sobriety helps with that, right?
Clear
mind, clear head.
It's like, you know, I really try to stay in like the only thing I have to do is like not drink or get high and make sure my daughter's good. And like everything else will fall into place. You know, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter. It's like, my identity and my ego isn't wrapped up in success anymore, which was like, and I definitely did learn that from being on TV, because if you let that, you will freaking be crushed.
How hard was it to separate that?
So hard.
I mean, I can't even imagine.
So painful. Because
people, the expression, don't fly too close to the sun, you're going to get burned. It's true. I mean, listen, I'm a podcaster. I would be lying to you if I don't want more eyeballs on the show, more listeners too.
Yeah.
But with that comes, you know, responsibility, accountability, and, you know, you're in the limelight.
Right.
And your life is going to be exposed. So there's definitely, you know, there's definitely a balance here. I want to switch gears and talk a little bit. Well, first of all, kudos to you for launching the brand and keeping that going.
Thank you.
It's absolutely awesome. And I know how hard it is.
Thanks.
And it's work. And it's real work to keep that shit going. I want to switch gears. And I do want to talk about sobriety. And I want to talk about accountability.
Yeah.
Quick clarification, just for everyone out there, fully sober or like California sober?
I'm fully sober.
Good for you. Nothing.
No.
Caffeine, coffee?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Right.
I can't function before I have my coffee.
I don't think I could ever give up coffee.
No, I don't think so either.
Right.
They're like, it's better for you.
The green drinks and all that. And I'm like, I just need that coffee fix.
Yeah. Even if they're like, it'll cure your anxiety. No, it won't. And I don't care. I need my coffee. I'll be anxious.
I think that's totally fair. You've spoken in length about your sobriety, so I don't want to use our time here for that. But I do want to talk about the element of accountability.
Yeah.
And I have not struggled with addiction. I certainly have addictive personalities in certain ways, so it's hard for me to relate.
Yeah.
So I would love for you to share with everybody the element of accountability and your struggle with it and when that breakthrough was.
Just to live with that. That's a fucked up situation. That's a fucked up thing to live with, you know? Like,
it's my nightmare. I can't even think about that.
I think there needs to be a lot more education on alcoholism, like also because alcohol kills more people than fentanyl. And I'm so glad that fentanyl and the open, listen, I have a friend whose son died recently from it. And, you know, I mean, it's ravaging.
Yeah, it's a pandemic.
Like, no, it's ravaging our country and our like young people and stuff. And we have a serious problem in America with it, but we also have a really bad alcohol problem.
And it's culturally acceptable and encouraged here. I mean, current events. But it is. It's glamorized.
Right.
Alcohol is glamorized.
And that's my thing. It's like show like the truth, right? Like this Wendy Williams documentary, which she has
she's going through right now.
She has alcohol-induced dementia.
But let's switch out of that. And I want to talk about how you've taken your experience and you're creating something powerful with Pillar.
Yes. Oh my God. Oh, I love how you're good. You're a good interviewer. Wow. Okay. All right. So Club Pillar was founded by an amazing friend that I have in that I met in the program and through recovery.
Do you call it P-Date?
What?
I'm kidding. Like P-Date. That's
sorry. Oh yeah. That's a good maybe.
Well, that could go a few different ways too.
Yeah,
depends what you're into.
Like golden shower date,
right?
You know?
No, I mean,
not my thing. No, but
we will not
whatever.
Be doing that on OnlyFans, which we'll get to.
Oh yeah, we have to get to OnlyFans too, which is an amazing business venture.
I told her how to subscribe, by the way, just for research purposes, but she was like, "All right, so
I love you guys. So, you guys are great.
So Pillar."
So Pillar, so Club Pillar, you know, founded by Jesse. Jesse Yurvader founded it. She brought me in to be an advisor and the creative lead on it. It is the app is launching in June. I'm so excited for it because it's not just a dating app. It's really a social community. And we're planning events right now, which we're gonna have. Because dating sober is freaking weird, and being sober is also weird.
Right,
socially,
dating's around like let's meet up for drinks. Let's meet up, like, it's so much part of the culture is drinking, right? And let's go have a bottle of wine.
Yes, and so much about like, and also it's like not feeling like, you know, people are scared to get sober because they don't want to feel left out.
And it's a big thing in like the workplace too. Like happy hours have been exactly. such a part of culture. So take that element out. Quick side note: Have you watched Loudermilk on Netflix?
Mm-mm.
I'll talk to you offline. Okay. You will love it.
What is it?
Loudermilk.
Oh wait, is it about a guy that runs?
He runs an AA group.
Oh my god, it's Berger from
Office.
Yes.
Space.
Okay, so someone told me to watch that.
You will love it. Okay. We are halfway through season two. Shout out.
I'm gonna watch it.
Yeah.
Shout out Loudermilk.
Shout out Loudermilk.
Shout out everything.
Shout out Loudermilk.
Shout out Berger. Just
so
kidding.
So where is the app right now? What stage?
We're launching in June. The app will be up and running in June.
Can I invest in it still?
Yeah.
I feel like it's going to be awesome.
It's going to be.
It's going to be huge.
I'll send you the investor deck.
Please. There's such a demand for this. And I think that there's so many people, aside from folks who battle addiction, there's just folks who don't even want to drink.
Exactly.
And they're like, I don't want to feel like I have to go on all these dates. And every night of the week, now I have to have a drink. Now I have to have a drink because what else am I going to do? How do you break the ice? How do you feel comfortable on a date? So, well, let's ask some pro tips here. If there's no social lube involved,
yep.
gets a little dry. How do you, I'm such a cornball, I'm such a dad joke for the day. I got to meet my quota of 3 dad jokes a day. If I'm on a podcast, I get 4 dad jokes.
You have one more.
Yeah, I'm good for one more. Thanks, man. He's my, Chris, shout out to my producer, Chris Mueller. Shout out to Chris Mueller. Chris Mueller in the house with his, look at that hair, man. What the fuck is going on with that hair?
It's fluffy.
Are you out of money? Like, do you need me to buy you a haircut, bro? He's been with me for 4 years.
No,
he's traveled with me. He's my sidekick.
I bother my boyfriend about his hair all I've seen the time.
Is he in the tribe?
He's in the tribe.
What are the benefits of dating a Jewish guy?
He's not. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought he was in the alcoholic tribe, the Jewish tribe. Everyone thinks he's a Jew. He's not Jewish. It's the craziest thing. But his father was adopted by a Jewish guy.
There's some points there. But going back to what I was saying before, like the social lubrication when it comes to relationships and it comes to breaking the ice.
Yeah.
What are some of those pro tips if you're like a bit of an introvert and maybe.
Which I am, actually.
Right. So if you're on a date, how do you break the ice without having a little bit of that social lube? You can use social lube, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know, actually. I just socialize. Like, I don't know. You know, I didn't drink.
But not everyone could do that.
But listen, I didn't drink for so many years, you know, like when I put all my sobriety time together, even though there was a year period that I drank, it's been like 13 years of not drinking. So I've had to get used to like not drinking and socializing.
Are you okay around it? Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, totally. You could roll into bars, restaurants, and just be totally fine?
Totally. I think it would be hard to have, like, a boyfriend who, like, if I lived, like, I have, like, a vodka in my cabinet,
doesn't
right?
Bother you.
Like, no, for people that come over. I think if I had, like, a boyfriend that was, like, getting drunk, like, that would be hard. Like, I wouldn't like that, you know?
There's too much of a separation. You're not on the same wavelength.
Yeah, and I don't want to, like, hang out with someone drunk. That's, like, not fun. If someone has a drink at dinner, that's different. If someone's getting shit-faced at dinner,
I'm like,
bye. It's
so shitty when, like, one of us, like I'm just saying hypothetically, like when one side is intoxicated and the other person's like,
right, it's
wrong.
Like you're not
wrong.
On the same.
Like, you're ridiculous right now.
I'm also like drunk. People are just fucking annoying. Like it's not like fun. Like,
am
it's
I a happy
not...
drunk or a shitty drunk?
You're not.
I snore, but I'm snoring too, which is bad. But
no, you're me drunk.
Oh.
All right, we're gonna work on that. Moving forward, we're gonna edit Chris. Edit that out of the clip it, cut it. We're out of it. But
let me go back
please.
To Club Pillar because
I was about to
thank you.
You
because
did the transition.
It's not just for like it's not people who are just like who are like recovering alcoholics or like sober. It's for people who like maybe have a drink once a month or like just don't want to get like wasted or like maybe they're just sober curious or whatever it is. Because again, like you said, that dating culture, it's so much. I mean, there's literally people on dating apps that are like, if you don't drink, then don't like swipe for me or right or what left. I don't know. I'm not on dating apps, but you know, it's like people that drink and also people that drink or have like drink a lot. They don't want to be confronted with that. Right. So
yeah,
they don't,
don't
want someone who's going to like be
face.
Like, yo,
don't
drink
shame
so much.
Me. Don't drink shame me. I enjoy
exactly.
my, I enjoy
which
my
I don't drink. Blame them also. Mm-hmm. Like they need to live their life and people that don't drink need to live their life, you know?
And you see all sides of it. This is exciting. I think that there's a real demand for it.
I think so too.
What is the vibe out there? Like, how are you guys building momentum on this?
We have been meeting with a lot of people to do brand partnerships. And like I said, we're really focusing on events right now, which are going to start. And I'll keep you posted on that. And we're meeting with people we're fundraising now too.
Yeah, we'll chat offline about that. So Leah has a lot going on right now. You have Married to the Mob. You have Pillar going on right now. Talk to us about your friendship with Drea De Matteo from The Sopranos.
Oh my God,
And right now, if I have the video up, I'm going to queue up this picture of you and her in this lingerie, kind of like with your back turned over there. I was like,
yeah,
that's a good.
Thank
stuff.
God for Photoshop because my ass isn't that big. Just kidding. I actually, this is funny. Brandi Glanville from Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Ally,
another amazing truth teller who gets maligned and, you know, just all of the things. She's wonderful. And she was like, girl, you need to be on OnlyFans. And I'm like, oh, really? She's like, yeah, like, let me show you how to do it, you know? And so she kind of put me on. And I'm like, wait, this is like amazing. I've never really sold my like sexuality. And it's fun. It's actually a lot of fun. It's great.
Was there any hesitation with OnlyFans?
I had my own judgments on myself, right? What will people think? What will my mom say? Even though then my mom was like, yeah, do it, whatever. You know, what will people on Instagram think, you know?
And it's
like,
oh
my
God,
it doesn't. And then it's like, I just don't even give it. You can't care. And again, every time I come up against this, it's such a great learning lesson again to be like, oh wait, it doesn't fucking matter.
People like, it doesn't, like, as long as it's about how you feel.
Exactly. And I feel great about doing it. Yeah. Or I wouldn't do it.
Empowering.
I feel totally.
You need to express your sexuality in your way. It's not, you know, dehumanizing.
It's great. It's a wonderful platform. Every morning I do two things. After I do a 10-minute meditation, I check my Coinbase account, I check my OnlyFans account.
Shout out to Bitcoin in the house.
Oh my god,
I showed it to her the other day. She goes, what the fuck?
I mean,
let it ride. Hold
fucking
hold on for dear life, people.
Hold
by the dip. Hold on,
it's a bull run right now. And it's the numbers that they're saying are like, and I believe it. I fucking believe that. Well, shit is gonna
once it goes to mainstream, and I always say, once my friends who aren't in the space start talking about it, I know I'm in a good position.
Yeah. What else do you own?
A little bit of ETH.
Me too. Yeah. I just bought some. I sold my Solana.
I moved my Solana into Bitcoin 4 months ago.
That's what I did.
I just did it on the app. I was just like, fuck it.
Yeah. Like why am I even going to? No.
It's chump change. Exactly. Like roll it in and then it's just going to.
Exactly.
So I want to get back to OnlyFans because Bitcoin's not that exciting here.
It is to me.
It is.
But no, but
OnlyFans. So you said your meditation, you check your Coinbase account, yes, and then you.
Then I check my OnlyFans account.
And how many followers do you have right now?
A good amount.
And it's a revenue generating operation.
It is, but it's also a lot of, it's work, you know.
Do you have an agency that does it?
It's definitely work. I have an agency that helps me post things, you know.
There's a whole crazy marketing strategies and like discounts. So I've heard, babe.
It's a lot. There's a lot that goes into it.
It's big business.
And, you know, I have a friend, Chrissy Miller, who I said, Chrissy, and I know she's really good friends with Drea. And I'm like, you got to introduce me to her. Like, the mob wife aesthetic is blowing up. I'm relaunching Married to the Mob. This girl's on OnlyFans. I'm on OnlyFans.
Perfect collab.
She's been kind of going against the grain with Hollywood. You know, I'm going against the grain now also. And so, and she's been a really amazing support for me. We're like real friends now. You know, she's wonderful. I'm going to see her next week. I'm going to LA.
It's fucking awesome. How far are you willing to push it on OnlyFans? I mean, right now it's pretty skimpy stuff there.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I'm not really interested in showing badge or showing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, just like kind of. And also.
It's classy sexuality.
It's classy sexuality. And also, but also like, it's also a great place for porn stars and you know, like, and I
capitalism.
It's wonderful.
You got it. Make some money off it.
It's like, why not? You know, why the fuck not? I've always been the kind of feminist where I've been pro sex worker and pro ho and all those things. And I'm like, pro fucking strippers, like, get it. Like, I do not judge those women. They are fucking smart. They're putting themselves through law school.
Right.
Like, fuck everyone.
Shake what your mama gave you. Work
like,
with it, right?
Oh my God. Like, if you don't have a problem doing it, then no one else should.
Right.
You know?
As long as we're not talking about sex trafficking and it's your decision. And you can make
of
it
course.
Like you cut that shit out of it and you're doing it for the right reasons. I am all for female empowerment. And the the ability, and I've seen the numbers that these ladies and men have made on there.
It's crazy.
Like, it's your business. By the way, do you know the fun fact of how much money the founder who actually bought the business, and you know the story about OnlyFans?
Yeah.
He's the second owner.
Yes.
I forgot his name. I'll
Alex.
Edit. And I think he makes a $3 million a day bonus. It's some fucking fact check me on that, Chris, while we're talking. How much does the founder of OnlyFans make per day in a bonus? You can chime in when we get to that stat.
But
he's killing it. And yeah. You know what? It's empowering there. OnlyFans, we've talked about a lot of things on this show.
Go and subscribe.
Go and subscribe to Leah's OnlyFans. I do want to bring up this midlife crisis. I turned 45 a couple days ago.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. You did wish me a happy birthday on LinkedIn.
Oh, I did wish you a happy birthday on LinkedIn. I saw that. You had the Fudgy the Whale.
I fucking house that thing. I love Fudgy the Whale.
No, it's
a perfect
so good.
Cake. Like, there's nothing better than a Carvel. I mean, if Carvel wants to sponsor this show, I don't know if they sponsor a podcast, but like.
They should.
The podcast, Fudgy the Whale. Give me like two of those per month. Do we have a stat on that?
Between 1 to 2 million. Like, I guess the answers for both. Starting in 2022, by the way.
A day?
Fucking.
Yeah. It was more than.
Sex sells.
This guy is he might be the smartest.
What economic crisis?
Yeah. People,
right? Yeah.
How much is your monthly subscription?
It's $10 a month. It's very.
I'll take four.
It's very affordable, you know. But you have to pay extra to see, you know,
if you want to upsell to the other.
Yes.
That's the beauty of the marketing there. But you know, we've spoken about a lot of things here, and I want to get back to this midlife crisis. Like, I'm going to tell you something. We have friends. I have friends that, you know, I graduated college with, and they're fucking miserable. I look at them on their, like, they're not going out. They're not enjoying themselves in their lives. And they look at our life that we have. And I said, it's because we made it a priority. We prioritize us and our relationship and our friends.
Good.
And
so
I'm doing
smart.
This. And we built this infrastructure where we're not relying on only like our in-laws to babysit. No one else could babysit my kid. And I think that's what's kept me from having a midlife crisis. I've never felt it.
Hmm.
And I was with my dad. We were on vacation a couple of weeks ago. And I'm like, Dad, did you feel the way I felt at 45? Like, do you even feel this? He's like, A, I don't remember. And he goes, B, it's just all in your mind how you feel. Like, age is just a fucking number. But you talk about this midlife crisis. Like, what was there a specific moment or instance where you kind of felt it?
Wait,
like
when did I talk about that? Because then I can...
I just have a note here.
Okay, because I do. No, it's interesting because I'm wondering when I talked about it. I'm like, how did he know that? Like, when have I talked about that?
Deep dive.
So 41, I'm 41 and I'm going to be 42 this summer.
You look a day over 36.
Thank you. And I think that I was having a midlife crisis because I was like, who am I?
So it's more of a...
It was like an existential... It was like a...
It wasn't a physiology...
It was an... I don't think it was like...
I felt 41...
Like no,
my body?
No. Oh, no, no, no.
No, no.
No, no, no.
No, we're good with that.
No, I'm good with that. Yeah, because you can kind of test to see what your body is as
I'm literally 78 years old. If they cut me in half like a tree and looked inside, they'd be like, you're old wood.
I feel like, you know, I was weightlifting. I was doing a lot of shit. Like, you know, I stay in the gym, even though I haven't been doing it lately, but I am going to go boxing later. But
good.
It was more of like a dark night of the soul. Who am I? I need to get grounded again. I need to get like, what is my purpose? What is like my, you know, what is my truth? What is my, and honestly,
and I think that brings us to the finish line here. And we talk about being grounded and you surround yourself with incredible advisors, your friends, your family, the monks,
the rabbis, the lawyers,
the acupuncturists,
the psychics,
everyone there. And you probably hear a lot of advice and you have to filter that advice. But Lee McSweeney, what is that single greatest piece of advice that you've ever received that you take action on every day?
That none of this really matters. None of this actually matters. What matters is who is going to be holding my hand when I take my last breath.
Chills.
That's all that matters. Now I feel like crying.
Amen to that. Well, if you know what, that's all that matters. And if I don't make somebody cry in this podcast, I'm not doing my job. So
I'm a crybaby.
I'm gonna double down on that, Leah. Let's bring it home.
No, life is beautiful. Like, it's beautiful. We're so blessed. Sorry. Now I'm going the other way. I'm sorry, but it's true.
No, it is. We're lucky to be here and we're lucky to be alive.
We are.
We're lucky to have beautiful children.
We are.
And we're raising them the right way and we're doing things right. I always say how you do anything is how you do everything. Right?
Yeah.
Like how you live your life, how you show up in the world, how you interact with your friends, your family, how you interact with strangers, with fucking strangers on the street.
That's
who you are. So while I got you in this state.
In this vulnerable.
You look back on your life and those really fucking hard times at your deepest, darkest moments when you're battling some addiction and you had to dig down deep inside and harness that inner tenacity to pull you up. And right now, what you just spoke about, you're grateful because you know who you are and you're teaching your daughter the same thing and you're showing up to this world, authentic self. What is your beacon? What is your compass? Leah McSweeney, what is your North Star in life?
My North Star actually has to be trying to honor what I believe to be doing the right thing, you know? And I don't mean that in a corny way. Like I'm a great person. Like, cause you know, I'm fucked up just like everybody else. But I try to do the right thing. I really try. I don't always do it, but I try.
And
I think people, just because you're in a fucking dirty business, doesn't mean you have to be dirty. You know, you could try to do the right fucking thing sometimes.
Short and sweet. What is, I'm going to throw a curveball out here. What is your word of power?
Tomorrow.
We're going to leave everyone with that. Leah McSweeney, I want to thank you so much. I want to thank you so much for showing up and being your true, authentic self and giving your all, being open, honest, and raw. This isn't the first time we met because we met on TV and that's when we first found you. And I was like, she's interesting. She's awesome. There's so many layers there. So to have this opportunity, shout out to Vinny P for for hooking this up here. I want to thank you so much for joining me. Where can folks find you? Check out Married to the Mob. Where else could they find you? And I'm going to link it up in the comments. You'll see it right here on the bottom of the screen.
Yeah, like, you know, at Leah Mob on Instagram, OnlyFans, at Leah McSweeney, or maybe it's at Leah Mob, actually. I don't know. One of those. I can't remember.
We'll link it up.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it. Amazing interviewer.
Thank you.
Amazing podcast.
I appreciate that so much. And everyone out there, you know where to find out more at thepodcast.com. Follow us on all the social media channels. Remember, be good to yourself, be better to others, and catch us next week for another great episode of the podcast. Take care, everybody.
Wisdom is forever, but for us, it's time to go. Thank you for joining us. Luckily, we'll be back with our next episode soon, jam-packed with more incredible humans. Thank you for listening, subscribing, and sharing. To join the conversation, search The Pawscast on LinkedIn. And to catch up on past episodes and more info, please visit www.thepawscast.com.